Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what's up, and welcome to episode number 2 of WWE Rivalries. This week we are going to be diving into one of the most historic rivalries in The Undertaker versus Triple H, and one that is, for all intents and purposes, about 2 decades long. There's a lot to unravel in this one, and I can't wait to get to it with maybe an unpopular opinion that I have about this particular rivalry that may ruffle some feathers and not fall along with the popular narrative. But before getting into that, welcome everyone. I had largely good reviews for the inaugural show of Shane McMahon versus Kane, and I'm hoping that maybe you guys checked out some of their matches, the Unforgiven match, the ambulance match at Survivor Series, or like I mentioned last week, Survivor Series 2003 as a whole, which was just, what a time for wrestling that was. 2003, great year. But talking about the here and now, I just want to go over some of the current WWE product that transpired over the past week. Not going to go too deep into it. Obviously, you have your Raw review and your SmackDown review with Matt and the HSP guys. So I'll just keep it very brief. I just want to touch on the 2 big storylines going on. And I'll start off with the big return of the big dog Roman Reigns. And look, as far as The Fiend and Braun Strowman goes, I've got to say I've largely enjoyed that program. I think it's been one of the more intriguing programs that WWE has had in a while, in large part due to just how damn good Bray Wyatt is at whatever he puts his mind to. And I think WWE playing on their past history with one another is a lost art in WWE, where it's almost as if they think that all of the fans have memory loss and they don't believe that fans remember past things. But I found it really cool that they brought you back to how Braun Strowman started, which was the big goon for the Wyatt family. And the match itself, I wasn't crazy about. I found it kind of sloppy at times. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, the match was a means to the end. And the end being Roman Reigns. And, look, I said it with Matt back in March when it was first revealed that Roman Reigns would be taking time off from WWE given the COVID-19 pandemic, that whoever took the reins as the Universal Champion, in this case it ended up being Braun Strowman, or now The Fiend Bray Wyatt, it was just a placeholder. It was always known, at least in my mind and the mind of many, that Roman Reigns would take his rightful place atop the SmackDown roster when and if he returned. And now, what is it? 5 months later, about, he has returned. He's already been instilled in a championship match this coming Sunday at Payback, which, on a side note, the quickest turnaround of all time for a pay-per-view, I do believe. But look, it's unfortunate to say, but in my mind I think it's all but a slam dunk that Roman Reigns walks away with the Universal Championship. I think it was a slam dunk that he was going to go over on Goldberg at WrestleMania, especially when you consider that Braun Strowman won the championship against Goldberg. And I think WWE was just biding their time until Roman Reigns got back on a full-time basis to completely pull the trigger on him once again, making his way up to the top of the card. And you know what? It's been 2 calendar years since Roman Reigns has been Universal Champion, when he relinquished the title in late 2018 amidst his cancer diagnosis. So I can't be all that upset about it. But, and look, I'm talking as if it's a sure thing. And for all I know, maybe they'll keep the belt on The Fiend. But I'm just not too confident in that. I think Roman Reigns will walk away with the championship. And I guess it'll be a nice change of pace. Like I just said, he hasn't been a world champion for 2 years. And he never technically lost that belt. He relinquished it. So, hey, maybe it's well-deserved. And hopefully they will add some more depth to that Roman Reigns character going forward if and when he does take the Universal Championship away from The Fiend post-payback. On the Raw side of things, look, I think that the ending to the WWE Championship match was unexpected, but not necessarily a bad thing. Because I personally thought that Randy Orton was going to walk away with the WWE Championship, and I thought it was a good move. But look, having neither of them get a finish on one another, having it be, it was a clean finish by Drew McIntyre on the backslide, but it's a way to prolong this program. And as we learned, they will not be going one-on-one at Payback, which I do believe is a good thing. Randy Orton is going to be going one-on-one with the new Raw addition in Keith Lee. But look, I think what they did to protect Randy Orton losing to a backslide while also showing Drew as a formidable champion against arguably the best wrestler in this generation, Randy Orton, it came, not to use the cliche, but we didn't see that finish coming. And I think it was actually pretty good because now Randy Orton obviously got 3 punt kicks in on Drew on Raw. And you know that whatever the pay-per-view is following Payback, which is, I want to say it's Night of Champions, don't quote me on that. But I think it's pretty certain that we will see Randy Orton versus Drew. And I still do believe that when this program does finally culminate between Drew and Randy, Randy will come away with the WWE Championship. Maybe Drew gets it back closer to WrestleMania, which I think would be the good decision. I love Drew as champion. I think he's done an excellent job in that role. The best babyface champion the company has had since probably AJ Styles in 2018, I believe. He had a year-long run after defeating Jinder Mahal. Wasn't a fan of the Seth Rollins babyface championship run. But yeah, even though Drew has been excellent and I hope he gets the belt back somewhere down the line, I do think that putting the belt on Randy Orton would be pretty damn awesome in the here and now until Edge comes back and they could maybe rekindle their feud. But let's get to the reason why you guys are all here, and that is for rivalries. And this week, as I mentioned before, we are going to look back at Triple H versus The Undertaker. So look, I'll give you a bit of a backstory if you guys didn't watch it back then. The first time these two really came into contact was during the corporate ministry. And if you don't know what that was, it was The Undertaker's Ministry of Darkness formed with the corporation, or a rogue version of the corporation led by Shane McMahon, to really run roughshod on the WWE as we know it. And Triple H, who was part of the corporation at that time, was part of the corporate ministry. But while this was happening, they didn't really come into contact with one another because Triple H was pretty much just a henchman. And The Undertaker was in a lengthy rivalry with Stone Cold Steve Austin and such. So when we first actually got to see these guys lock horns as opponents when they had both reached main event status was by the year 2000 when The Undertaker returned to help The Rock. So what had happened there is that The Undertaker had been missing in action for quite a few months at this point. And this had led to The Rock and Triple H becoming pretty much the faces of the WWE because Stone Cold Steve Austin was also on the shelf at this time. So post WrestleMania 2000, The Rock had a match with Triple H at Judgment Day. And what ended up happening was the Triple H and the McMahons have just formed the McMahon-Helmsley regime, and all odds were against The Rock. The Undertaker returned, helped The Rock, ultimately ending in a no contest, and then what happened at the following pay-per-view, which I believe was King of the Ring 2000, is you had a six-man tag team match of The Rock, Kane, and The Undertaker versus the McMahons and Triple H, and the championship was on the line, Triple H being the WWF champion at this time. If you don't remember, what happened was, the stipulation rather, was if the team of The Rock, Taker, or Kane won, whoever scored the pinfall would be the WWF champion. So it was a tag team match, but at the same time, Kane and The Undertaker and The Rock weren't exactly all on the same page for obvious reasons. And we saw in this match, Kane turned on his brother, turned on The Rock, and The Rock ended up getting the pinfall on Mr. McMahon, thus becoming the WWF champion. So then they kind of went their own separate ways for quite a while. The Stone Cold Steve Austin ended up returning. The Undertaker began a summer-long feud with Kane, leading to a match at SummerSlam 2000. The Rock and Triple H actually main evented that SummerSlam with Kurt Angle in a triple threat match for the WWF Championship. And then upon the return of Stone Cold Steve Austin, him and Triple H engaged in a rivalry that is one of the best of this time, which culminated in a Three Stages of Hell match at No Way Out 2001, which I believe Matt already reviewed on Wrestling Nostalgia. So let's bring it to late winter 2001, when these guys finally cross paths again on the build-up to WrestleMania 17. The main event to WrestleMania 17 is arguably the best main event of all time, which was The Rock, the champion, against Stone Cold Steve Austin. And Matt reviewed this rivalry at length in a three-part series, and they were just... That build, that match, it was just second to none. At this time in WWE, The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin were absolutely on top of their game. They were the undisputed top guys. No one held a candle to them. But while Rock and Austin were the two undisputed top guys in the company, you had The Undertaker and Triple H, who were main event guys in their own right. And it was a pretty luxurious time for Vince McMahon to have The Undertaker and Triple H as almost backup guys. Not mid-card guys by any stretch, but as you saw at the main event of WrestleMania 17, it was all about The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And while everyone thinks of the rivalry of Triple H versus Undertaker as their back-to-back WrestleManias at 27-28, what a lot of people forget is that they first locked horns at this WrestleMania as the co-main event under Rock and Austin. And let me tell you, this was an awesome match. And let's take a look at the preview and the video package to this match and the build to WrestleMania 17.
Please, I'm begging you, put it down.
That would be a nasty fall, wouldn't it?
What do you want?
I want a match with
Triple H at WrestleMania, one-on-one.
I can't do that.
What?
Put it down, please.
Hey,
sit still.
No,
down here.
No, please. No.
You've got what you want. You've got your match.
Triple H beats The Undertaker at WrestleMania on pay-per-view. The Game and Undertaker.
Bad things happen in my yard. I think they call it a decade of destruction.
Your yard is in the middle of my world. I warned your ass. You couldn't listen, could you, dead man?
Sledgehammer to the head of The Undertaker. Triple H is destroying The Undertaker's motorcycle. Triple H passing The Undertaker's motorcycle.
Oh, my God, look at The Undertaker's eyes. Can you imagine what The Undertaker's going to want to do to the Game at WrestleMania? There's going to be some serious hell to pay.
Man, just listening to that back gives me goosebumps. And man, how great is JR on commentary? And the video packages back then, the builds, the promos, the matches. At this very same pay-per-view, in my opinion, the best promo package to a match was Rock vs. Austin with the theme song of My Way by Limp Bizkit. Go check that out. But getting back to Triple H versus Undertaker, as you heard, it was pretty much Triple H talking smack. He beat everyone in the business. He had just come off the win versus Stone Cold Steve Austin at No Way Out. He had pretty much a year-long feud with The Rock in 2000. He had also had a mini feud with Kurt Angle in 2000 over Stephanie McMahon. And what was left at this point was The Undertaker. And as you heard, The Undertaker found a way around that restraining order, got Kane to pretty much kidnap Stephanie McMahon and blackmail then Commissioner William Regal into a WrestleMania match at WrestleMania 17. And this match, it went on right before Rock and Austin. It was a damn good match. It was a no holds barred. They fought into the crowd. And as you know, The Undertaker came out on top. And I believe he went 9-0 with this victory at WrestleMania 17. And fun fact, this was the first time, I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm 95% sure, this was the first WrestleMania that the Undertaker did not win via the Tombstone Piledriver. Yeah, pretty crazy. Hey, at this time, he had just come out. He was about a year in, I would say, to the American Badass gimmick, and he was using the Last Ride, which is, for all intents and purposes, a modified powerbomb as his finisher, and the chokeslam almost as a signature. And if I remember correctly, he had gone away from the Tombstone quite a bit during this time and was more about the Last Ride. So The Undertaker comes out on top, and he goes 9-0. And the following night on Monday Night Raw, what happens is the unthinkable, and that is Triple H aligning himself with Stone Cold Steve Austin as the two-man power trip alongside Vince McMahon. And if you guys don't remember that, obviously, WrestleMania 17, Stone Cold Steve Austin turns heel, goes over on The Rock with help from Vince McMahon. The following night on Raw, The Rock comes out, demands a rematch, puts Vince McMahon in a sharpshooter, and he gets a main event match on that very same night versus Stone Cold Steve Austin in a steel cage. Obviously, a newly heel version of Austin gets the help of Vince McMahon. They both get locked inside the cage with The Rock. And as one would expect in a two-on-one situation locked inside a steel cage, The Rock starts to get his ass beat by McMahon and Austin. And then next thing you know, Triple H's music hits, and out comes Triple H with a sledgehammer, which seemingly evening the odds given his long-standing feud that culminated at No Way Out just a month and a half prior with Steve Austin. He goes face-to-face with Steve Austin, and as The Rock's stumbling to his feet, Triple H nails The Rock in the head with the sledgehammer, continuing the beatdown with The Rock. The Rock loses, obviously. Stone Cold Steve Austin retains, and that Monday Night Raw goes off the air with Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and McMahon's all locking in arms, raising their hands, drinking beer, standing over The Rock. So what happened on the I believe the following SmackDown or the following Raw? Vince McMahon suspends The Rock indefinitely, aka The Rock was taking his first hiatus to go film The Scorpion Returns. So therefore leaving Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H to run roughshod on the entire roster. The Rock is gone, the top babyface is gone, and now you have these two mega heels and Triple H, who's one of the best heels of all time, and the newly turned Stone Cold Steve Austin to do whatever they damn well please. Austin's the WWF champion, and Triple H sets his sights on the Intercontinental Championship. And I believe it was the following Raw or two Raws afterwards, he has a match against then-champion Jeff Hardy for the Intercontinental Championship. And I'll give you, and I bet you guys are wondering at this point, well, what the hell does this have to do with Triple H and The Undertaker? Well, what happened on this particular Monday Night Raw that was main evented by Jeff Hardy versus Triple H for the Intercontinental Championship is, in my mind, for me personally, my favorite moment in WWE history. Yep, I'm not even kidding you. It wasn't a WrestleMania. It wasn't a Royal Rumble match. It wasn't a WWF Championship match. It wasn't even involved with The Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin, who, in my mind, are the two best of all time. And it was didn't even happen in a match. It happened after the main event. So let me set the stage for you. I'll play you the clip, and then I'll give you my reasoning why it is the best moment for me in wrestling history. So what happens in the match is Triple H goes over on Jeff Hardy, and while the match is going on, Stone Cold Steve Austin lays a beatdown on Matt Hardy backstage. While the match is going on, Stone Cold Steve Austin makes his way out to the ring, stalking Lita. Triple H wins the match, as I previously mentioned. They start a beatdown on Jeff Hardy in the ring with belts and everything. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H just laying waste to him. Matt Hardy comes out trying to make the save. That doesn't work either. They start beating down Matt and Jeff. Just absolutely gruesome beatdown. And then they put their sights set on Lita. Lita, trying to get away, gets caught by Stephanie McMahon from behind, who tosses Lita into the ring. And in the most sadistic visual you could possibly get, Lita is on her backside trying to crawl away from Triple H and a sadistic Stone Cold Steve Austin. And just as they're about to do whatever they had in mind, this happens. Man, what a moment that was. I still get goosebumps watching this clip. I remember being 7 years old about watching it live, and I never popped so hard. So, as you heard, The Undertaker and Kane make their way to the ring as badass as possible. I urge you guys to go watch this on YouTube. Just search up Taker and Kane Save Lita. and they just come out of the smoke. The lights go out. The explosion, as Kane's entrance usually has. And Rollin' by Limp Bizkit, which in my mind, my favorite song of all time. Best wrestling theme song of all time. And they just slowly waltz down to the ring. And as they get in the ring, Triple H and Stone Cold Steve Austin, like good heels, slither away and live to fight another day. And this sets the tone for Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H, in versus the Brothers of Destruction. And why I think this was the best moment for me in wrestling history is because, A, I've always loved the saves. I've loved when a babyface is getting beaten down in the ring and someone's music hits and a pop comes and a massive pop from the crowd. And that's always been my favorite thing about pro wrestling. As I said, the music is awesome. I found that Undertaker and Kane at this time were just on the top of their personal characters. I loved how Kane's character had evolved to this point. I loved where the American Badass was out, how they waltzed the ring, the crowd going ballistic, JR losing his mind. It was just so great. And like I said, I'm still getting goosebumps over it. So this ended up culminating in a tag team winner-take-all match at, I want to say it was Backlash 2001. And what had happened was is that The Undertaker and Kane won the world the WWF Tag Team Championships from Edge and Christian, I believe the following week on SmackDown or Raw. And as I previously mentioned, Austin was WWF champion, Triple H was Intercontinental champion. So it was a winner take all match, and they had a couple standing a feud. They broke Kane's arm. I remember it got pretty nasty. And as I said, The Rock was out of the picture at this point. So the entire show was centered around these four guys because they were holding all the major gold. And as it would have it, the two-man power trip ended up going over on the Brothers of Destruction at the pay-per-view, thus winning the WWF Tag Team Championships. Shortly thereafter, Triple H suffered an injury, which kept them out until January 2002. He missed the whole invasion angle, and thus ending the feud between the Brothers of Destruction and the two-man power trip as we know it. So, believe it or not, this was the last time The Undertaker and Triple H would cross paths for close to 10 years. And I could be wrong, so if someone else could point out them coming crossing paths or going face to face with one another in this time frame, by all means, call me out. Like I said, I did not really watch wrestling all that religiously from 08 to 2011. So if something happened in there, I surely missed it. But for the most part, these guys really didn't have any form of interactions during the Ruthless Aggression era, because Triple H became the face of Raw and The Undertaker became the face of SmackDown. And by the time 2002 rolled around, WWE was going through, I would say, a major facelift as a company, because the invasion angle had culminated. They were heading towards a brand split because at this point they were approaching 2 years of no competition from WCW, product getting a bit stale. And 2002 is when The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin gradually started making their ways out the door. Obviously, Austin walked out in the summer of 2002 and didn't return until February 2003. And The Rock was in and out at this point. You know, I would say SummerSlam 2002, after he lost to Brock Lesnar, is when it really started to hit home that The Rock was leaving sooner rather than later. He obviously returned in January of 2003 to have the program with Hollywood Hulk Hogan to have their rematch at No Way Out 2003, which was essentially just to push the feud for McMahon and Hulk Hogan at the following WrestleMania. Obviously, The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin had their third match at WrestleMania 19, which The Rock won, ended up being Stone Cold Steve Austin's final match. And post-WrestleMania 19, those two guys were done. That was the last full-time run as in-ring competitors for either of the guys. And what ended up happening is the reins got given to Triple H and The Undertaker. And if you look back at the early days of the Ruthless Aggression era, which I think started in, I would say, just about 2003, following WrestleMania 19, is when you could really say that the Ruthless Aggression era started in full. I guess it kind of started in 2002, but I kind of consider it post-WrestleMania 19 when Austin and The Rock really moved on, that it really kind of like hit its stride. And you really didn't have a face of the company. Obviously, Brock Lesnar was the face, but it caught, but there was always something missing with Brock, because you always got that vibe that he wasn't always fully committed. Obviously, HBK had come back on Monday Night Raw, and you had guys on the upswing like Kurt Angle as well. And on the Raw side of things, they were slowly starting to build Evolution with Randy Orton and Batista. Goldberg shortly debuted following WrestleMania 19. On SmackDown, you had The Big Show. So they still had a lot of guys, but they didn't have a face. And while they were looking for the next face of WWE to fill the to take the reins that were left by The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, which ultimately ended up being John Cena about 2 years later, you had Triple H and The Undertaker really carry the weight of the company on their shoulders. On Raw, it was Triple H who was world champion on and off for about 2 or 3 years straight, good or bad, but he was consistently in the main event, whether that be versus Chris Benoit or against Randy Orton or Shawn Michaels or Kevin Nash. And then on the SmackDown side of things, you had The Undertaker. And while he wasn't in the main event all the time, which was often filled by guys like Brock Lesnar and The Big Show and Kurt Angle and Eddie Guerrero later on, he was always there. He was always pulling his weight. He was doing his thing. Obviously, in late 2003, he got buried alive, came back as the Dead Man in 04. And the only difference between Taker and Triple H at this time, I would say, is that Triple H was always the world champion of Raw, and The Undertaker didn't win a WWE championship up until WrestleMania 23 at against Batista at Ford Field, when he won the World Heavyweight title. And it had been 4 years since he had won a world championship at that point. And just on a side note, the last time The Undertaker won the WWE championship, that was 2002 when he beat Hulk Hogan. And he dropped it to The Rock at the main event of Vengeance 2002 in the triple threat match with The Rock and Kurt Angle. So The Undertaker went 4 years without a world title. And when he did win the championship, it wasn't even the WWE championship. It was the World Heavyweight title. So, but even though he wasn't always the champion, The Undertaker was the original, sorry to say, but Roman Reigns ripped this off from The Undertaker. He was the big dog on the SmackDown side of things. So because the brand split was so solid and strict back then, these two guys really didn't cross paths until it was abolished. And that really started happening in, I would say, 08, 09 is when they started getting real loose with the brand split rules. And that's when it started with Taker versus Shawn Michaels, and they had their back-to-back classics at WrestleMania 25 and 26. And Undertaker subsequently retired Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 26. So the following year, The Undertaker is in the ring, comes out on Monday Night Raw, and this was a rare occurrence, at least when I was growing up, to see The Undertaker on Raw. He was always a SmackDown guy, I would say, post-2002. So he comes out on an episode of Monday Night Raw, and before he could get a word out, this happens. So you're probably wondering why I played an audio clip for you that really had no dialogue, and that's because none was needed. Triple H's music hit, comes out, has a stare down with The Undertaker, and what happens? The classic thing, Triple H looks at the WrestleMania logo, The Undertaker looks back at the WrestleMania logo, they look at each other, and without words being said, we know that these guys are locking horns at WrestleMania 27, which is 10 years after their original matchup at WrestleMania 17. And this was a really good match, a no-holds-barred match, a match that I think was one of the first times that you legitimately thought The Undertaker was going to lose. And what happened was is he beat Triple H beat The Undertaker pretty bad. And once again, The Undertaker got the win, but yet again, he beat Triple H with a move other than the Tombstone Piledriver. He locked him in a Hell's Gate and made Triple H tap out in that classic footage and that classic image, rather, of Triple H holding the sledgehammer while being choked out by The Undertaker's Hell's Gate. And if you guys don't remember that, that was kind of like, it was almost like an inverted triangle choke that he started using in the late 2000s, which I found pretty cool. I thought it was a pretty damn cool submission hold. And this was pretty cool for a lot of reasons, because this was Triple H's last feud as a full-time in-ring competitor. Because in the summer of 2011, that's when he really started introducing the business authority type character. As I remember that clip of when he came out and informed Vince McMahon that the board of directors had fired him. And then you had the whole walkout angle, and then John Laurinaitis came into the picture, and God, he was awful. He was really bad. By all accounts, he's a great backstage guy, but on screen was not his forte. And so Undertaker wins their first meeting, and as we all know, they lock horns at the following WrestleMania as well, in the Hell in a Cell with Shawn Michaels as the special guest referee. And this was the first match that I really started noticing The Undertaker as getting up there in age. You know, he came out with the hood. He was bald, of course. And it was a great match. Obviously, there was the sweet chin music on The Undertaker that Shawn Michaels did in ring, as Shawn Michaels played his part great as being conflicted internally. The duration of the match, he was really having a hard time trying to be impartial in this thing. And next thing you know, The Undertaker ended up scoring the win. And I believe he won this with the Tombstone Piledriver. So three times the charm for The Undertaker to put Triple H away at WrestleMania with the Tombstone Piledriver. So The Undertaker goes, how many at this point? I guess he was third. No, he must have been approaching 20-0 at this point. Somewhere around there. I think this may have been his 20th victory. So this, at least in my mind, was, as the slogan of the match said, it was the end of the era of this type. These wrestlers from this time, because as I mentioned before, these guys were the ones left standing from the Attitude Era when all the other ones went away. The Rock went away in 2003. Stone Cold Steve Austin went away in 2003. Kurt Angle left in 2006, rather. He left for TNA. Shawn Michaels had retired 2 years prior at WrestleMania 26 when The Undertaker beat him. Obviously, we know the tragedy that happened with guys like Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, who were big parts, even though mid-card guys from the Attitude Era, but they were still big parts of it. You still had The Big Show and Kane kicking around, but again, they were never top guys. So Triple H and The Undertaker were the two guys left standing from that era. So when this match was billed as end of the era, it really was in a way. And I know The Rock competed at this WrestleMania, and he went over on John Cena in the main event. But The Rock, you know, he was very part-time at this point. He had a good run from 2011 to 2013, rather, when he came back on and off during that time. But he still wasn't full-time like Triple H and The Undertaker were to this point. And you know, The Undertaker still continues to fight, but this was kind of the closing of the book on him as a at least semi-regular in-ring guy. And Triple H, too, he really started making his way into the authority-type role after this pay-per-view. He engaged in the feud with Brock Lesnar, where Brock Lesnar broke his arm, and they fought at the following WrestleMania. And, you know, this was not the last time that these two guys would fight, as they locked horns at Crown Jewel or Super Showdown, and then it led to the following pay-per-view of D-Generation X versus the Brothers of Destruction, which was an unmitigated disaster. And I want to touch a bit on the build to Super Showdown. I believe in Australia is when these two went one-on-one for the final time. And I remember WWE building this as one of the best rivalries of all time, and the best this and the best that, two of the greatest. And you know what? This is all true. These two are two of the greatest. And you know, I've never been a huge Undertaker guy, but I respect the hell out of him. I preferred him more as the American Badass. I found the Dead Man gimmick could get a bit hokey at times, but you know, you give it a pass for how good the Undertaker was. And Triple H for me is the best heel of all time, so I love these guys. But the best rivalry of all time, I find it hard to say that, because while I love these two and it is a excellent rivalry, and here's the unpopular opinion I'm going to give, which I mentioned at the beginning of this show, these guys kind of became a rivalry out of a forced need as opposed to an organic development. And I'll tell you why. And I exclude their original rivalry in 2001, because that was as organic as you can get. But like I said, they were the two guys left standing from the best days of pro wrestling, of the Attitude and early Ruthless Aggression era. Those were the best days of pro wrestling, if you ask most fans. And like I said, Austin, Rock, Angle, Foley, HBK, all these guys were gone at this point. And these two were the left standing, the two left standing, rather. So they became the faces of that era because that's all that was left. So they were building a feud because that's all Vince and creative could use to build on from that time, that era of WWE. These were the only two guys left still standing. You know, I don't want to take anything away from The Undertaker and Triple H, but they benefited greatly because of the premature retirements of The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And that's exactly what it was. It was premature retirements. Maybe not Stone Cold Steve Austin as much because they had really done everything they could with him. He had won 3 Royal Rumbles, main evented 3 WrestleManias, 6 WWF championships, because he rose to the top quite faster than The Rock did. But if you look at The Rock, like, he could have easily had another 4 or 5 years on top of his game, and he would have been the face of WWE up until probably 06-07 if he had never made the jump to Hollywood. And there was still a lot of juice that could have been squeezed out of The Rock. And you saw it in 2011 when he came back. He main evented WrestleMania 20 and 29. I still think he had it in the ring. But like I said, it's not to take anything away from Triple H and The Undertaker, but they became as big as they did in a lot of ways because the path was cleared for them. Between the era of The Rock and Austin and John Cena and Randy Orton, these two were the guys, and they were the workhorses, and they did just a masterful job of keeping WWE kind of relevant and on top during a real time of transition from 2002 to probably late 2004. But as far as their rivalry goes, at times, more the later stages of their rivalry, at times I feel it was a bit forced just because the creative team had nobody else and no other superstars from that era to work with. But all in all, a great rivalry, a long-standing rivalry, a lot of matches to draw from. And look, guys, I hope you enjoyed it. This was really, really fun. I would urge you guys to go back and watch some of the classics between these two. And look, I'll catch you next week, and you take it easy.